The Acts on chapter 27. Acts chapter 27, reading verse 21. But after long abstinence, Paul stood forth in the midst of them and said, Sirs, ye should have hearkened unto me, and not have loosed from Crete, and to have gained this harm and loss. And now I exhort you to be of good cheer, for there shall be no loss of any man's life among you, but of the ship. For there stood by me this night the angel of God, whose I am, and whom I serve, saying, Fear not, Paul, thou must be brought before Caesar, and lo, God hath given thee all them that sail with thee. Wherefore, sirs, be of good cheer, for I believe God that it shall be even as it was told me. Now, that's all I wish to read. There's a couple of expressions in our reading that I think are worthy of our note. You'll notice on this occasion, Paul could remind the company that his counsel and ministry would have saved them from the loss and harm that they experienced. Now, to individuals, there's counsel and ministry that would have preserved many a testimony from harm and loss. When you think of many a wrecked life of a believer, had they only listened to the counsel and ministry of a Paul, that would have preserved them from the loss and harm experience. Will you think of Paul's ministry? Be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. Would that not have saved the testimony and life of many a young brother? Of many a young sister had they hearkened to the counsel of Paul's ministry? Will you think of the preserving character of Paul's ministry on assembly testimony? Do you know, sometimes when I read down the announcements on Saturday night in the Telegraph, I wonder if Paul's ministry has been discarded. A ministry that would preserve us in our individual testimony. And a ministry from Paul that would preserve us in our assembly testimonies. For did you notice in writing to Timothy, the key verse in that epistle said the apostle, how thou oughtest to behave thyself, or how one ought to behave themselves in the house of God, which is the church of God, the pillar and ground of the truth. Did you notice in that epistle, he touches on the praying brother? You know, there are some quarters where the sisters pray publicly and say, the counsel of Paul to guide in the house of God, I will therefore that the males pray in every place, lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting. The praying brother. You have the adorned sister. Sister, how you adorn yourself has a big effect in the very atmosphere in the house of God. You have the blameless bishop. For not only does the bishop guide by his counsel, but he guides by his behavior. I remember when we were young, my sister did something that mother reproved her for, and she simply answered, "Well, my daddy does it." Did you notice that the young was just following the example of the older? We have the proved deacon. We have the exemplary youth. Oh, Timothy, if you're going to overcome the disadvantage of youth, Paul's counsel to the youth was this: Timothy, overcome that by exemplary behavior. Then we have the deserving widow. But really, what I want you to notice in this passage is another expression of the apostle. For as he stood before the company that day, he said, "The angel of God, whose I am, and whom I serve." A man with a conviction that I'm a divine purchase, and I'm called to serve God. Tell me, was it not a very sad day in the experience of Moses when those daughters of the Midianites came home and they said, "An Egyptian helped us and saved us from the shepherds." It might have been his accent, you know, after 40 years down in Egypt. It might have been the dress that he wore. But there was something about Moses on that occasion. When those daughters said, "We have met an Egyptian today." Tell me, would it not be sad if in our contacts with others, they get the impression we have met an Egyptian? We're writing a gospel. A chapter each day, by deeds that we do and by things that we say. Men read what we write, whether faithless or true. Say, what is the gospel according to you? You know, a folk around about us, they're not interested in Greek grammar or tenses. They're really not interested, you know, much in what we hold doctrinally. But we are contacting people, and many of them, the only impression that they will get of Christianity is what they observe in us. Moses was not an Egyptian, but on that occasion his true identity was hidden. We've been hearing a good deal about tears tonight. The bitterest experience in the life of Peter was that experience when he went out and wept bitterly. It was the experience in the life of Peter when he said, "I know not the man." And he denied allegiance to Christ. And it brought sorrow and bitterness into his soul. Young brother, young sister, if you want to live a miserable life, you hide your allegiance to Christ. But I'm not going to take your time up tonight with being critical of better men than any one of us, because if we feed our souls on the faults of others, it will only produce similar faults in our own lives. Could we look at some in our Bible, and indeed in adverse circumstances, like Paul stood out and they acknowledged their allegiance to their Lord, and in faithfulness served him. You know, these books that are being reprinted of the ministry and lives of men in the past century, they make me feel I wish I'd been born 100 years ago. And most of us feel, you know, if I had only been placed in those circumstances, or if I had only been allowed to serve in those days when there seemed to be an interest in the gospel and in things spiritually, I would have done a lot better. You know, some of those who rose highest in the scripture records were those who served in darkest days and in adverse circumstances. Will you think about Joseph? Sold by his brethren. Carried down to slave down in Egypt, and 20 years later the experience of the anguish of his soul couldn't be erased from the memory of those hardened men. It must have been 20 years of misery for them. For there's nothing as miserable as to live with an accusing conscience. And from that place of honor in his father's house, he's carried down to slave in the home of Potiphar, and sold he was for a paltry 20 pieces of silver. Oh, I'm not speaking now of a man with a holy head, you know. I'm speaking as a boy in his teens. Potiphar, tell me, what do you think about this slave you've got in the home? He says, I'll tell you something about this Hebrew. He has such a character that I would place everything that I have in his hand, and I wouldn't even take stock. For Joseph, he wotteth not what is in his house. Says Potiphar, I tell you that there's something about this Hebrew that has come into my home that is a great contrast with the Egyptian, for I would trust him with everything that I have in my home. Good. I'll tell you more, Potiphar. You could trust him with your wife and his company. So the temptation that crossed the path of Joseph in Potiphar's house was something that would have been accepted in the corrupt society of Egypt. Joseph, you're away from your father's home now. You're not among your brethren now. You're living in Egypt now. Tell me, isn't it strange how climatized we get to conditions around us? I a young brother or young sister going off to university to study. Mind you, the brilliant mind doesn't seem to enhance morals. Dangerous atmosphere. Young sister away from home in the nursing career. Well, how did Joseph act?
He says, "How shall I do this great wickedness and sin against God, whose I am and whom I serve?" You see, conditions are adverse, and the company has changed. But he says, "My fellowship with God is the most important matter in my life, whose I am and whom I serve."
You could put Joseph in prison, you know. A happier man in prison with communications coming from God, you know, than Potiphar living in the home with that woman. And they could shut Joseph up in prison, but they couldn't close out divine communications that were coming to him.
And the word of the Lord tried him, "Whose I am and whom I serve."
Another teenager. She has been mentioned. We haven't got her name. But you know there's a record on high. She has seen her nation defeated. She has seen her own home plundered. And she's taken away from her own family circle, and she's brought down to slave in the home of her captor.
And she hears Naaman has leprosy. You know, I'm made of stuff, and I would be inclined to say, well, that'll take the pride out of him. That will take the shine of his victory in battle out of him. But she didn't do that. Slightly she prayed for those that despitefully used her. And she said to Naaman's wife, "Would God, my Lord, whose I am and whom I serve, were with the prophet which is in Samaria, for he will recover him of his leprosy." Wait a minute, girl. Have you ever heard of a leper being cleansed through the ministry of Elisha?
No.
Said Christ, "There were many lepers in the land the days of Elisha the prophet, and none of them were cleansed." Have you ever seen a leper cleansed? "No, no," she says, "but I serve a God." Without a doubt in her mind, oh, she says with Paul, "I believe God. The God I know could cleanse a leper."
Something more here, you know. I would say her behavior must have been such that Naaman's wife likely said to Naaman, "Naaman, I want to tell you, if my maid says it, you can believe it." Imagine the captain of the host of the king of Syria going off with a chariot laden with gold and silver and changes of raiment, and he's going to a prophet that never seen a leper cleansed before.
And what has convinced you? He says, our maid said it.
Tell me, would your master question your word? Would your master question what you said?
And off he went. You know, it's one of the portions in my Bible. I would have loved to have read of the scene when Naaman came home with his flesh, as it were, the flesh of a child. In fact, it's likely if or when we meet Naaman and Glory, he'd say, you know, I'd like for you to meet the girl that came into our home. And in our faithfulness to God, she brought a heathen in to know the power of the God whose I am and whom I serve. And that's the unchanging God. It's likely, you know, Daniel was just in his teens. Or if he was out of them, he wasn't long out of them. When he was taken away from the center that he loved and down into Babylon, it would be questionable to know whether Egypt or Babylon was the worst, you know. Notice the move of the king down there. For those four names that you read, there's Daniel and his three brethren, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Each one of their names linked them with Jehovah. Oh, said Nebuchadnezzar, that'll not do. I'll give them new names, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And Belteshazzar. And those four names all link them with the system of Babylon. Says Nebuchadnezzar will hide their true identity in Babylon. Do you know what? Nebuchadnezzar failed to do in his day. Now, I don't say this hard, for I would like to think I had a heart that embraced every true believer. Tell me, would we have one in the meeting tonight? And you have taken on a name that associates you with Babylon. And hides your true identity with Christ. Did you notice that Daniel never said, I, Daniel? But he did. He didn't say, I, Belteshazzar. But he said, I, Daniel. This man belongs to Jehovah. He doesn't belong to Babylon, you know. And when he eventually appeared before the king, you know, the king offered him honors. Belshazzar did. He said, you'd be the third ruler in the kingdom. My father, myself, and then you'll be next. But there's no kingdom the next morning, you know. It went down just as quick as that, you know. And there was no king there to honor his promise. Tell me, wasn't it well that Daniel was depending on promotion from a different source? Thou shalt stand in thy lot at the close of the days. And there'll be a God there to honor that promise, you know.
But when he appeared before King Darius or Darius, whatever way you want to pronounce it, said that king, is thy God whom thou servest able to deliver? And Daniel maintained a testimony in Babylon. And it's likely that he never was returned to Jerusalem throughout those years. He's thy God, whom thou servest continually. God, whose I am, and whom I serve. Young brother, if you're asked at school or college, who do you belong to? You say you belong to Christ, for he died for you. And own your allegiance to Christ, and it'll give you a joy in your soul, and it'll preserve you from many a snare.